Good evening. I will start with a question and then we move on. We see in the beginning of the Torah the story with Yaakov and Esav, that Esav comes, he finds Yaakov making a soup, nazid, lentil soup, and is willing to buy the lentil soup for the price of his olam haba. Is willing to give everything, his spiritual future, for what? For one drop of soup, for a spoon of soup, or for a cup of soup, whatever it was. Is this an indication that Esav is Yerei Shamayim or not? What do you say? If someone comes and tell you, listen, give me $5, I'll sell you my olam haba. Let's make a shtar. Is this show that this person has Yirat Shamayim or is a complete loser? What does it show? Complete loser, right? Or if you don't want to call him a loser, then you know for sure he has no faith in Hashem at all. If he had even 1% faith in Hashem for $5 soup, he would give up his Olam Haba, his Bechorah, whatever. Torah says that the Bechor is something special. Here he comes and he doesn't care. But just later, we found that Esav come, he finds that Yaakov stole the brachot. What did he do? He started to scream, his heart is broken, he's begging his father, give me also bracha, you only have one bracha. What is this? I promise you today, if you find a person that gives you a shtar, an agreement for $5 for a cup of soup, that he sells you his olam haba and bechorah, I promise you that he doesn't care to get a bracha from the rabbi, for sure. Somebody like this, right? Somebody like this will not come to the Rav to cry to give him a bracha. He doesn't believe in anything, you see. So how is it possible? The same Esav, here, just give me the soup, no problem. Here he says, what? You don't have bracha for me? He cries, his heart is broken. See in the Torah, no. How can you explain this? Yeah.
He
didn't know what bracha is going to give him, right? He chose to give him a bracha, but he didn't really know what bracha is going to give him. But definitely when a person goes to get a bracha, he has some kind of faith in the Torah, because without having any faith, right? Why don't you go to the priest to get a bracha? Because you don't believe in the New Testament. You know it's nonsense. It's the toilet paper. That's why you're not going to get it. Why you're not going to the Qadi in Iran in a mosque to give you a bracha? Because you know it's a waste of time, right? Why you're not going to the politician in a Knesset in Israel? Because you know they're clowns. Why you go to a kosher rabbi? Because you know if he's going to give you bracha, thanks to the help and the instruction of Hashem, he may help if Hashem wants. It's like a pipe to Hashem, maybe an express mail. It will go faster. That's all. That's all the trick here. So if somebody stole your bracha from the Rav and the Rav tell you, I'm sorry, I finished my brachos for today, you sit and cry on the floor, that's an indication you have big Yerei Shamayim. No? Same Torah, ma. How you explain this? That's one question. I give you another question. You know, the rabbis here in a Beit Din, they have all the time cases between two Jews fighting over money. Partners, neighbors, accidents, deals, business, commission, all kinds of problems. Sometimes a person that worth millions of dollars or maybe hundreds of millions has an argument with someone over $10,000 commission, let's say. This is cases that happens every week. He has buildings, he has offices, he has houses, he owns tons of property, and he has one employee who works for him. Sue him for $10,000, he quit work, and he sue him for $10,000, $15,000. So, he goes with him to court, and the Rav finds the employee right. He tells the boss, pay him the $10,000. How long does it take that boss to make 10,000? two, 3 hours, he makes it in his business. He's getting angry.
Hello.
Bang on the table. Sometimes he throw things on the floor. He gets angry at the Rav. What kind of judge you are? For 2 weeks he doesn't stop speaking Lashon Hara about the Beis Din, about the Rabbanim. It's all, believe me, it's all nonsense, the Beis Din. He's out of his mind for $10,000. It's like you take a kid and take a quarter for him. How long is he going to cry over the quarter? How long? Few minutes in the worst scenario. But he is getting angry. The same person, if he eats glad kosher food, if he wanted to buy a cow to slaughter it, to have meat for the Yom Tov, for his entire family, let's say he wanted to save money. So instead of buying 100 pounds of meat for all the guests for 8 days and pay fortune, I'll buy myself the cow and I'll eat it. I'll bring a shochet, we'll save half a price. Okay, he got a cow, he brings the same rabbi from the same court or a different one, doesn't make a difference. And he tell him, Rabbi, tell me if it's glad kosher or not. Am I allowed to eat it or not? Check the lung, check the animal. So the rabbi check, he say, it's taref. Now what's the difference between a cow that it's glad kosher or bet yosef to a cow that it's taref? You know the difference, right? $10,000 as opposed to $500. What do we do with the cows that after you slaughter them, they're not kosher? You give the meat to the Arabs. That's what you see, halal meat. All the stores you see, they have one in Main Street here. Halal meat means slaughtered. Not, it wasn't killed. It's not nevela, like the Christians eat nevelot. They shoot it and they eat. That's the worst. So they are like half enough. They don't eat nevelot, but they eat slaughtered, but they don't go by all the rules that the Torah say. If they have a lung, in a hole in the lung, or there's all kinds of, I don't know, broken bones or things like this in the things, a mum, they eat it, no problem. So now, because the rabbi told you that it's not kosher, he also lost $10,000. But in this case, he doesn't curse the rabbi. He doesn't cry for 2 weeks. It's the same $10,000. What's the difference?
Depends on the term.
Yeah.
I think the difference is the kavod of the person.
Oh, very good. No?
I heard this before. In the betting, you lose the face. Who is the right? The 10,000 is not the issue. The issue is who is the winner and who is the loser. It's war, you want to come out on top. So you lose, you come out, he's angry with the rabbi.
Right.
But the same rabbi is telling me that the car is terrible, when it costs me 10,000, he said, okay, 10,000, I gotta lose.
No problem. So what's the source of the problem?
Kavod.
Kavod, the gava. So you see that most of the money that a person lose and go to court and fight and sacrifice his life for, it's not really the money. Yes, of course, some people for a dollar they kill themselves. But I'm not talking crazy people. Average person, we go always by the average when we talk. What do we see? A person is willing to lose money. It's not the issue so much. He's going to cry over it for 5 minutes and forget. That's it. The problem is something, there's one thing he cannot forget and cannot give up, is his honor, his pride, the gava. So what do we find from here? That all the agony and the pain almost in the world comes from one bad midah, it's the gava. Which, you know what? In 1 month a person can get out of it. If a person knows very good how much Hashem cannot stand him because he's gaftan, it's hard for me to believe that he will continue to be gaftan. If every Musar book you see, it starts always with Gava, and it says to the point that Hashem say, I cannot stand someone that is proud, cannot stand him. And ani vo yicholim ladur b'oto makom, it means if he's in a room, I cannot be there. There's no two gods in one room. If there he thinks he's God, let him be there. I cannot come. That's how bad it gets. A person, I'm not talking non-religious people, then they don't care about anything. I'm talking someone who's religious, but is full of pride. And we have plenty of those people, you know, they're not so real, they're not realizing how bad it is. Going back to Esav is the same answer. The same answer. Esav doesn't mind to lose his Bechora, his Olam Haba, nothing. It's not a fight, it's not an argument. He's offering a merchandise, I'm paying it and I'm taking it. There's no problem. But when my brother took my bracha, I don't care about the bracha. What bothers me is him, that he came and stole it. That's what bothers him. You understand? So you see, the motive is not what it sometimes look. Also in yeshivot sometimes. Sometimes you see a person ask you a question and he's right. But you, because of your pride, you don't want to admit. Why? Because then everyone will say, hey, this guy is a beginner, he already told you, he knows better than you. So you're going to twist the whole Torah, the whole Gemara, and sell them nonsense, and by hoping by tomorrow again they will forget, as long as you don't have to admit in public that you were wrong. And for that you're going to get a huge punishment. And that's what people don't know. Sometimes they come, they want to learn Torah, they see, and if their pride, their pride play a very heavy role when they learn chevrutot, they ended up losing more than making. Because Torah learning, it's the greatest business in life. It's the best money maker, spiritual money. No mitzvah earns for you more than learning Torah, you know. Chafetz Chaim made a calculation that the average person say 200 words a minute. And 200 words, in the average word you have 5 letters, which gives you 1,000 letters a minute. So if you calculate in 1 hour, it's 60,000 letters in an hour. So if you, let's say, come 1 hour a night, chevruta, I'm not talking on top of those who go to yeshiva, they learn most of the day. But I'm talking someone that he wasn't fortunate, his parents sent him to public. He doesn't have Torah, but he goes, he finds a place to go for 1 hour a night to sit and listen or to learn with someone one-on-one, and an average hour he can do 50,000-60,000 mitzvot, probably more than what a secular Jew that doesn't learn Torah will do in his entire life. And that's the truth. Because if you take an average ignorant that never opens a book, maybe he doesn't know how to read, whatever, he has a reason, he cannot learn. Tefillin, one mitzvah. Tzedakah, another mitzvah. Think about it. Help a person chesed, another mitzvah. Keep Shabbat, another mitzvah. Add all of them. Beautiful mitzvot. Birkat Levana, another mitzvah. Sfirat HaOmer, 50 days, one mitzvah. Lulav, one mitzvah. Sukkah, 8 days, one mitzvah. Matzah, one seir, one mitzvah. How much it adds up to? The whole year. Maybe if he's lucky, 60,000. 1 hour. So how is it possible that a person is willing to do every day more than an hour effort for certain mitzvot? When it comes to Torah, sometimes 5 minutes he doesn't want to give. Why is it? How is it? That doesn't make sense. When it comes to money, everybody in the world wants to work as less as possible to get as much as possible, right? The person tell you, come to work for me. What's the first question? How much an hour? So he says, $10 an hour. I said, fine. 5 minutes later, someone come and say, come work for me. How much an hour? $20 an hour. You don't even call the first one. You go to the second, right? Why? If I already put an hour, I want to earn double. Do you ever find a person that willing to go to a place that they pay him the cheapest salary? If it's not normal. But we are doing the same thing every day of our life. For instance, a person sits and learns. Who is to say that you're allowed to pick up the phone even for 5 seconds to say, I'm busy now, call me later? How, that I'm busy now, call me later was 5 seconds. According to the calculation, he lost fortune. The Gemara says, I want you to understand what is it, how far it goes to. The Gemara says that a person that learns Torah and stop is going to be judged by the shortest time you can imagine, less than a second. The Gemara gives it an example. How is it? The time it takes to swallow your saliva. The person speaks, learns Gemara, and then he stops. He has to swallow. How long? 1.5 seconds. If he had a reason, it was false, anus. No punishment. You lose the reward, but no punishment. If there was no reason for this 1 second, you know what the Gemara says? Guess what's the punishment for that? You know, you have no understanding what's the value of Torah in the eyes of Hashem. That's one of the main reasons why people don't pay respect to the Torah. That's why the Gemara says, Torah munachat bekeren zavit kol harotze avo veitol. The Torah is standing alone in a corner, like someone that nobody pays attention to. Just come and grab it, but no one is interested. The Gemara says, every day there's an echo come from Har Sinai, where we receive the Torah. The influence is in that area. It's around Jordan there, you know. They're in the Midbar. Every day there's an echo come there. Oy la briot me'elbona shel Torah. What a shame for the public, for the Jewish public, for disgracing the Torah, putting it down. What do you see? This was 2,000 years ago. What are we going to say today? Today, if you hear the echo, you will be deaf for a million years, if you will be able to hear it. Yes.
So what's the answer? The person had 1 second. Is this live?
Don't worry, I didn't forget. So, no. What do you think? What do you think the Gemara says? Ma'achilim oto gechalim retamim. Who knows what it means?
If it's fire. Coals of fire?
Coals of fire. The angels, when it comes to Israel, after Hashem sentenced him, the same way for learning of Torah, the reward is the biggest, it's endless. The same way the punishment is the worst. Everything is equal both ways. Both ways. You either can make the most or can lose the most, depending if you do it right or wrong, or you're not doing it at all. It gets so bad, in a way, if we don't do it, that the Rambam writes, you can read in Hilchot Talmud Torah, that no one is dismissed. No one is dismissed from the learning, from the obligation to learn Torah. No one. Even a person in his last moments of his life, connected in a hospital to machines. Rambam doesn't write machines, but if you read in the Rambam, you see that's what he means, clearly. A person that is sick, is in bed, he cannot move, he can hardly open his eyes, he's very, very old, or he doesn't have a dime to buy a piece of bread, starving, he's hungry, he's knocking on doors to collect, just to have food. All these people, he gave you the worst scenarios of a person that is very, very miserable, still has an obligation in every open minute to learn Torah. The Torah says, "Vagita bam yomam v'layla." And the first question in a trial of a Jew is what? For men? What is it? First question. Kavat ha'itim la Torah? That's the first question. So the question is, one wise guy wanted to ask an interesting question. He said, "Rabbi, I understand, you know, we all in a yeshiva, that if we're not paying respect to the Torah and we don't really learn serious, that Hashem will ask us, did you set up time for the Torah? Why? Because we know what the Torah is. We tasted from it. We understand the value of the Torah. We understand it's very important to learn Torah. So from us, it makes sense that Hashem will ask this question. Did you set up time every day, routine, every day? You never missed it? But someone like all these clowns in the Knesset that don't even know, hardly know how to read, they don't even know how to read Rashi. They don't even believe in the Torah. Some of them is against the Torah b'shita, in the system. Everything with the Torah, they on purpose they do the opposite. Mamash, they make fun, they don't care, they're not interested to even hear. Somebody like this, how exactly Hashem is going to start his trial with? Did you set up time for the Torah? First ask him, why you murder 50 people? Why you stole tens of millions of dollars from the taxpayers in Israel? Why you cheated on your wife every moment? Why you beat up your children? Why you use drugs? Why you this? Why you that? There's a list of millions of things that much more makes sense to ask this criminal than to ask him, why didn't you learn Torah? Think about it. If you take the worst person, the worst wicked person, is a criminal, is the gangster of the whole town. If he comes to you and you have to give him Musa, you're going to have the nerve to ask him, why didn't you set up time for the Torah? He's going to say, tell me please, find me a normal judge. So the question is, the Gemara did not make difference. The Gemara say every Jew, no exception. Smart, foolish, rich, poor. What's the Gemara says? First question, קבעת עיתים לתורה, נסעת ונתת באמונה, ציפית לישועה. Did you set up time every day to learn Torah? Second, did you make all your business and all your behaving was faithfully and honestly? And the third, did you expect the salvation in Mashiach every second of your life? Normally, if this is what God chose to start the trial with, we have to assume that this is the most important three things in life. So it's interesting. You may think, okay, learning Torah, I can understand. To be straight and honest in business, not to cheat, not to forge, not to do insurance fraud, not to cheat my partner, not to steal from the customers, not to lie. This is all makes sense. Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. It's for sure important. Tzipit al Yeshua? And if I didn't? So what's the big deal? I didn't. I'm settling on my situation to stay miserable like this without Mashiach. What's the big sin here? You understand? The first two is logical in a human brain. What's the third one? Why it's so important that every second of your life you have to expect Mashiach? Every second. To the point there was one rabbi used to go all his life with a suitcase with the stuff in it. Never left the suitcase. Never. Whenever he left the house, when he comes to the wedding, he has a suitcase. Everywhere he goes. Why? If Mashiach comes right now, I'm ready. This is what I want to take with me. Whatever happened in the world, I don't know. At least I have this. If it's feeling there, you have this, tzitzit, a few books, his personal stuff, maybe some money, he's ready. You know, one guy came to the rabbi. He told him, Rabbi, can I ask you a favor? I say, yes. He say, I tell you, I want to prepare a coat and to put $5 in it. After I die, I want you to make sure that you bury me with this coat. Take this coat, make sure it's a thick coat, you know, I'm going to give it to you, but never forget, whenever I die, you, the rabbi in town, I'm sure you're going to be there, make sure they bury me with this coat and the $5 in a pocket. So I ask him, why do you need a coat and $5 when you go down to the ground? He said, I tell you, there's two reasons for that. One, we know we all believe in the resurrection of the dead, no? So one day, if I'm going to be there a year, 2 years, whatever, one day I'm going to get up, no? What happens if it's going to be in the winter? So I'm going to have a coat. He said, okay, what do you need the $5 for? He said that I'm going to be able to get a hot cup of coffee. Because I know my children, he says. If my children will not give it to me. You understand? So the rabbi says, why your children won't give it to me? He said, you know the children today. They only take. They give nothing. So he said, I tell you, you don't need the coat and you don't need the $5. So he said, why? He said, if you have this kind of children, you're not going to wake up in the resurrection of the dead. You for sure fail in your life. If your children will not give you $5 to buy coffee, something went wrong with you in your life, if you got to that situation. And you know what's the sad part? There's so many families like this. So many families. Sometimes you can't blame the kids why they feel what they feel about their parents. Most of the time they're wrong. They just have no end to how much they want. They never appreciate anything. And that's because maybe their parents didn't give them the right education to appreciate. Some wealthy families, they are not aware of the damage they made the children when they make them spoil and give them everything they just want. Later on, these children do not appreciate anything in life, and for sure they don't appreciate Hashem. That's the biggest problem. When a kid gets everything he wanted for 18 years, even 20, 30, his father keeps giving him money, credit card, sending here, sending there, pays rent. Whatever Hashem does for him, he never appreciated. Perhaps this kid once in his life was not appreciative to Hashem, when actually Judaism means to be appreciative every second of your life. That's what we say in Nishmat Kol Chai, in Shabbat. Ilu pilu male shira kayam. So many beautiful words if you understand a little bit Hebrew. Bottom line, this is what it says. No matter how much we're going to thank you, Hashem, it's not enough. If tens of thousands of thousands of thousands of thanks will not be enough for all the miracles of miracles of miracles you do for us every second. But a person that all his life grew up with everything, he does not know what does it mean to appreciate. And that's why when someone that doesn't owe him anything anyway, one time didn't give him, after 30 years, he's willing to put an X on him, and perhaps he does not even remember one favor this person did for him in the last 30 years. For the first time we would let him down, he put an X on him. Baruch Hashem, we're lucky that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not like this with us. Usually Hashem is with us measure for measure. Same way you behave, that's Hashem, that's what Hashem does to you. You have mercy on the public, Hashem has mercy on you. You judge people to the strict side, Hashem judge you to the strict, not to the lenient side. It's more measure for measure. You disrespect your wife, Hashem send you someone to disrespect you. You're a liar, people lie to you. You're a thief, people will steal from you, or you lose it somewhere. You understand? That's the way it is. You're a mirror of yourself. That's what it means in Shir LaMa'alot. Did you ever think what does it mean? Hashem tzilcha al yad yaminecha. Hashem is your shadow on your right side. Hashem is my shadow. Shadow, you know, you stand, you look at the floor, you see yourself, an image on the floor. Whatever you do, that's what it does. Same thing, right? But I never saw that Hashem is my shadow. I'm a shadow of myself. The shadow is me. Whatever I do, I see from the sun. What does it mean Hashem is really your shadow? It means what the same thing, the shadow, whatever you do, it does the same. Hashem does the same to you. That's what it means. That's the secret in this verse. Hashem tzilcha al yad yaminecha, whatever you do, that's what Hashem does for you. So now, Baruch Hashem, imagine all your life you do mitzvot. All your life. And one time you make one sin after 30 years, and Hashem say, cannot look at you anymore. I put an X on your finish. Nothing is remembered. That's how the way we are. I'll give you an example. How many times you have a friend for many years, and he did so many favors to you? One time you needed him and he wasn't there for you, or he spoke one word against you, or embarrassed you in public, or whatever, he did something bad to you. What happened? From this moment you don't talk to him for 20 years. But if you put on a scale the bad and the good he did for you, the scale will break. The good is so much, but you're willing to erase him for one little problem. You understand? Right or wrong? Reality or not reality? How many families the brother don't talk? The mothers, the parents-in-law? That's what the Gemara says. Before Mashiach came, kala kama b'chamata. The daughters-in-law automatically in their genes already against their mother-in-law. It's a part of creation. It will be part of life. It's one of the symptoms before Mashiach comes. I want to promise you one thing. You're young. I'm also young. But my parents and older, that generation, so it means your grandparents, let's put it that way. And from then on, go back in history, there was never a generation that there was that somebody could even stand the fact that there will be a girl that will have chutzpah to her mother-in-law. Nobody even dared to have. First of all, nobody had chutzpah to their parents like people today. But I'm not talking parents, even to the parents-in-law. Which means everyone in Israel until 20, 30 years ago used to call their mother-in-law mom. She's not your mother, you call her mom. Or mamash like this. Today, in most families, they're not allowed in. If there's a simcha or something, if your parents come, I'm not going to be there. Or if your mother is coming, I'm not going to be in Shabbos home. That's the situation I'm seeing today. Why is it? That's one of the simanim of Mashiach. Chutzpah tisgeh. People will have a lot of chutzpah. Do you remember ever a situation chutzpah like today? Well, when I was a kid, you know, when an old person or pregnant woman got on a bus, believe me, I'm not exaggerating, almost everyone got up begging her to take her seat for 45 minutes ride. 10, 45 minutes in a bus, that's not that easy, you know. Why? Pregnant woman. Ah, I'm going to sit, I'm young, and she's going to stand today. She can stand 10 hours. If she's lucky, one person will get up. Today, in Israel, if an old person is on the bus sitting, the young guys that get up, forcing him to get up and take his chair. And I'm not exaggerating. That's the situation today, 20 years later. Right? So what do you see? That's another prophecy of the Gemara that's happening. Another prophecy, it's going to be a lot of inflation all the time. Things keeps going higher and higher. It's also right. Pnei ador kepnei hakelev. The face of the generation, the people look like dogs. About a year ago, I come to my mailbox, I open it up, I see advertisement from AT&T. You know, if you ever saw it, you know what I mean. Send it to millions of people here. I opened it up, booklet. They see people, owners and dogs that look alike. Unbelievable. I never saw such a thing. And these goyim, they brag about the fact that they look like their dogs, their best buddy.
If you have a dog,
so it's better not to have a dog if you gotta look like
it. It looks like the guy or the guy looks like the dog.
If the dog looks like the owner,
they pay him a lot of money.
Yeah. You see, that's a part of stupidity. It's also said that there will be plenty of grapes, but there will be plenty of grapes, but the wine will still be very expensive. Grapes, every day they throw in Israel tons of grapes to the ocean. Why? And also in America, don't think. Why? Because they don't want to lower the price in the market. You go to a store, they charge you $2.99, $3.99 a pound. If they will produce and they send to the markets all the grapes that grow from all the farmers in America or in Mexico, in Miami, whatever, if they will bring it to the market, it will be a quarter a pound. For a quarter a pound, they are not willing to work. All day I'm going to work, bring tons of grapes, and you're going to pay me $200 a load? No, I'm going to throw a lot of them to the... Why should I carry it all the way to the market? Throw everything, I dump everything. And the rest, what happened? I'm going to bring it to the market, and I'm going to get 10 times more. They don't want to lower the price. Same thing tomatoes, same thing tons of things. So what do you see here? This is another prophecy. Say it will be tons of grapes. 50 years ago there was no tons of grapes. Israel was all swamps. You could hardly find one grape tree. 70, 80 years ago. Today, tons of grapes. And the wine is very expensive. $20-$30 a bottle. What is it, wine? Grape juice. Right? So that's interesting. This is another prophecy. And really a bottle of wine should have been $2, $1. If you go by the amount of grapes, what's grapes? You put some seeds and it grows. And it's an easy tree to grow, to raise. Plus, you know, the Gemara gives a whole list. It says that the government in Israel will become like a circus, full of clowns and jokers. True or not? Now you have to understand one thing here. I have to say one more thing about this. When this was written, we are talking about 2100 years ago, approximately, in the time of the Mishnah. You know who was the Knesset in Israel at that generation? 120 top people in history. Each one of them is almost Moshe Rabbeinu. Prophets, Tanaim, Mechaye Metim, able to resurrect the dead, know all the Torah from left to right by heart. Who would have the nerve to write in a book in that generation, when you see 120 angels in front of you controlling the land, that there will be a day before Mashiach come, there will be 120 wicked clowns sitting here in this place? Who would have the nerve to write such a thing? This is not just a prophecy, this is a prophecy against all odds, against any prediction. Who could have predicted such a thing? I'll just show you when it's divine, it's divine. It's not about logic and about you know, assuming or anything like that, or about statistic and possibility and probability or whatever. So just to go back to what we started, so the Rambam writes, no one is dismissed from this obligation to learn Torah every day. So going back to the question I asked, that wise guy asked his rabbi, Rabbi, all these people in the street, drug dealers, driving on Shabbat, stealing, lying, murdering, speaking Lashonara all day, have no purpose to their life. How is it possible that Hashem will ask them and the rabbi is the same question in a trial? Did you set up time every day for the Torah? So you know what was the answer? What was the answer? Who knows what was the answer? What would you answer that student?
Everybody is chayav to learn Torah.
Yeah, but chayav, fine. So Hashem will ask them in the end. First, he has to focus on the worst things they did. For instance, a criminal knows not, he is not allowed to murder.
If they learned, they wouldn't do the
crime. Oh, Baruch Hashem, Chazak Yosef. That's what he told him. He told him, you don't understand. You know why that's the first question in a trial? Because all the sins and all the problems in life comes from not doing that first obligation, learn Torah. If that criminal would learn, he wouldn't be a drug dealer, he wouldn't be a Mechalel Shabbos, he wouldn't be a thief, he wouldn't speak Lashon Hara. And this is a guarantee formula. The more hours and the more serious you are in your learning, the more hours you learn, plus you're very serious in what you do, you put all your efforts in it, your chances to be righteous is hundreds or perhaps thousands of percent higher to be a righteous, holy person. Nobody in history was ever born holy. Nobody in history ever became righteous without knowing Torah. The Gemara says, "En am haaretz chassid." Impossible. Impossible that a person will be holy and tzaddik without knowing halachot. How? How? Every 5 minutes he makes a sin. He doesn't even know. He's not even aware of what he's doing. Can you say you know all the halachot? All the daily halachot that you have to learn? You know how many halachot a person has to know in order for him not to make sins at least once an hour? Because there's so many things you're not even aware of. And this is daily halachot. Perhaps at least we should know the daily halachot. From the minute we wake up, the order, this, the davening, allowed to talk, in the middle, not allowed to talk, holidays. Orach Chaim, that's what we call. But what about business halachot? Almost every one of us is a businessman. To be a businessman doesn't mean necessarily you have to own a business or to own a store or to buy and sell merchandise. To be a businessman means even to borrow something from someone. To borrow, to give it back, it got damaged. There's so many dinei mamonot, you need to know. So many things. You borrow a book. The book is 5 years old and one page fell off. So now you're thinking to yourself, it's not my fault. It's not a brand new book. It's bad luck that it came to my hand. Now this page fell. Can someone tell me what's the halacha here? No, some things that can happen to you every day. School, in the library, borrowing, coming to someone's house and playing with the pages, and by mistake you ripped a little bit from the page. And you think, what do you want? It's a 10 years old page. If it was brand new, it wouldn't rip. What? I just only did normal. It got ripped. Maybe you have to pay. Someone blocked you in a parking. You could not imagine that he's going to block you, because there's no parking there. But he blocked you, and he didn't know, and you went reverse, and you broke. You made a little scratch in his car. What's the law now? How are you going to pay? The guy is not there. What are you going to do now? Stand there all day? The menor. So many things that happen every hour, every moment of our life, and the average religious, non-religious, we don't even expect from them to do anything right. The religious people who wants to be righteous, I can count on in an average day perhaps hundreds of sins, some of them even from mass serious sins. Could be non-intentional, but there, here is the problem. That the Torah says that a person is ignorant his sins are intentional, which means if a person can learn Torah, it's normal, everyone has some free time, nobody can say I'm working 24 hours a day. You have 1, 2, 3, 4 hours a day that you waste on nonsense. If you dedicate some of it for Torah, the more you learn, the less sins you make. It's very simple. So if a person says, I don't, I'm not in the mood for that now, I'm young, let me go to movies, let me go with my friends, let me go do sports, I want to play basketball, come on, one day I'll learn. Right now I'm only 16 years old. And he doesn't go to learn. Public, they don't teach Torah. In the evening, he doesn't come to learn. Yosef has to beg him to come. See? 1 week to prepare a lecture, and half of the people don't show up anyway. And in the end, a person like this that makes sins, when he comes to Hashem, he will be sure that Hashem will judge him as a shogeg. Not intentional. I have news for you. It's all intentional 100%. 100%. The people don't know how to translate the word shogeg. The word shogeg doesn't mean that you could have learned in the last 20 years the laws of Shabbat and you neglected and you are not interested and now you made thousands of sins in Shabbat and now you think, okay, it's only shogeg. No, 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 it's not. You understand? And also even in learning, shigagat talmud ole zadon. If a rabbi is asked a question and he's not so sure 100% about the answer, and from his memory he tells him an answer and he tells that he was wrong and a Jew made a sin because of him, so the rabbi will say, it's not fair. What? Fine, I made a mistake, I'm a human being. No, the fact that he could have checked and make sure not to take a risk to make a mistake and he didn't, make him mezid, and that's 100% his fault and he's liable for that. And you may say, in this case, it doesn't even pay to be a rabbi. It can only go wrong. Every mistake you're going to make, you're going to be responsible for this guy. So many people calling, asking questions. It's enough 1% of the question you're going to make a mistake. You're already liable for thousands of sins every week. Who wants this job? Especially when most rabbis don't get even money for all these efforts. So what's the point? Better ignore the phone calls. Not to. Because on the other hand, when you do the right thing, your reward is huge. Nobody ever give up an opportunity to make fortune in business knowing the IRS will take 30% of it. I never saw a person that say, you know what, I'm not interested in this business, don't give it to me, don't give me these diamonds to sell, I don't want my commission, keep it for yourself. Why? Anyway, the government will take a third. I understand? Same thing here. Yes, you make mistakes, you're going to pay for the mistakes. Mistakes will make you lose. But the fact that you made mistake is because you went and earned so much, so here and there you made mistake, you have to lose. You understand how it works? If you're going to say, you know, since I can make mistakes, I might as well not do it, you earn nothing. You stay with zero. And that's the bottom line. So Bezrat Hashem, my suggestion to you, you all Baruch Hashem, I know some of you already go to yeshiva, some no, but the goal is that someone who goes to yeshiva all day, fine. He needs some time for his personal life. But those that do not go to yeshiva, there's a big mitzvah to bring some of your friends and make a kollel evening, that guys, young guys come and sit and learn. Once there will be students, there will be rabbis. This is the way it works. You know, I went yesterday to give a lecture in a place and they told me, come, teach us Gemara like in the old days. A few years ago I used to get a group of people and once a week we learn Gemara. I told them, today I don't have time for this, to come, sit Gemara. I'm coming from very far. I prepare to do lecture for many people than to sit with 5 people on a table. So I say, but let's make a deal. I told the guy, you get the 6 people that are willing to learn Gemara, and now I'm going to get you the guy who will teach you Gemara, I told him. Somebody very good, you'll be happy. So this is how it works. Once there are people are ready to learn, Hashem will find them someone to teach them. If they are not willing to do anything about it, they may walk around for 20 years, they won't find who's going to teach them. First, the person has to accept that they want to learn. I decided from tomorrow night to learn. From this moment on, Hashem takes this decision and brings it into his computer. And things starting to roll. This is how it works also when you come to ask a rabbi a question. There's always a question if it's la halacha or it's just a question. In general, asking question. There was a thing with Rabbi Ben Zion Abba Shaul, Alav Shalom, you know, the Or Letzion. You heard about him, right? He was a huge tzaddik and huge Talmid Chacham, Persian. He passed away about 6 years ago in Eretz Israel. It was Rabbi Ovadia Yosef and Rabbi Zion Abba Shaul, the two big ones, which were also used to be Chevruta when they were young. So somebody came to him and asked him, Rabbi, I'm about to get compensation money, pension. I'm retiring from work, and it's about $60,000 for all his life. And I'm asking you to tell me where to go to buy an apartment. In Jerusalem or in another city? Ramli, I think it was. City that is not so religious. The difference is that in Yerushalayim, the apartment costs 4 times more. Should he put it as a down payment and now struggle for the next how many years to pay mortgage? Or maybe take it and this is for this price he could have bought at that time, maybe an apartment, cash. Or it is money, but in a place that is not so religious. So he told him, closed his eyes, he told him, when you get the money, come and ask me this question again. So this person was curious, what's the difference if I got the money or not? I'm coming to ask you an halacha question. Just tell me which city is better, Yerushalayim or Ramle, with this kind of money. What should I do? Perhaps I don't even have money. I'm just asking you because I want to know the halacha. So I told him, Rabbi, what do you care to answer me now? It's very difficult for him to come to him, to find him. So he told him, now I don't have siyata dishmaya to answer you, because it's not lehalacha. It's not halacha lemase. It's just general question. Who's to say I'm going to have the right answer? When you actually come and your life depends on that decision, Hashem will already put the right words in my mouth. You understand how it works? You understand or not? This is how life is all about. That's it. Very simple. Also, I can give you an example for myself. Sometimes I sit and learn with myself or even with someone, and there's something I'm thinking, what's the answer, and I don't know the answer. A week later, someone asked me this question, and then the answer comes. That second, 5 more seconds, I'll be embarrassed in front of all the crowd. He asked me that question, and I don't know. I didn't know it. I at home, I sit, I look in the books. I don't find the answer. I ask this guy, he doesn't know. I ask this rabbi, he doesn't know. It's not true. I have to double check. Comes, he asks you the question. Hashem gives you the answer. Siyata dishmaya. Also, I can tell you from experience that some of these recordings, sometimes I listen to that on the way home or something, and I later find that I say things that I never learned in my life, and I don't know where it came out of my mouth. And I say, how did I say this? How did I know that Rambam say it? I don't remember even learning it. Then I go home and I open the page and I see the words of the Rambam. I'm asking myself, what's going on here? There's 2 ways to explain it. Depends what you want. One is, it's subconscious. Maybe I learned it 5 years ago, 10 years ago. It was in my back room. And that second, with the help of Hashem, it just came out. That's one way. That's the way people would like to explain it, not to make it a miracle. Because, you know, people are not believing miracles that easy. And the second way to believe is that you just never had it and Hashem just put it in your mouth. That moment, because that was the right moment for the crowd to hear what Hashem wanted. And that's it. It's called Ashgacha, Siyata Dishmaya. So far, any questions about what we say? Everything is clear. So everyone have an understanding of the learning of the Torah. You understood the calculation of the Chafetz Chaim, 60,000 letters a minute, which each one of them is equal like 600 and 13 mitzvot. So how much is that a minute? 60,000 multiplied by 613. It's more than 36 million in a minute.
So how does it work?
An hour. Multiplied by 10 hours a day, which is an average yeshiva guy sits and learns. How many mitzvot he has in a day? Huh? More than a whole city of Shomrei mitzvot that don't learn Torah. to go to a place, a lot of people with yarmulke go to walk from morning to night, don't have time to learn. You can perhaps take hundreds of them. One Talmid Yeshiva is equal on a scale more than all of them together. That's what it means in Shir HaShirim, Dodi Arad Legano Lilkot Shoshanim. You know the difference between the thorns and the rose, right? What do you have in the field more? Thorns? Bushes? Or roses? You have thorns. Plenty, plenty of weeds. Weeds grow non-stop. One day if you have a private house with some garden, you will remember my words. You want to put some trees, you have a piece of property, some land, you put this tree, you plant that one. Every few hours you come, you cannot believe, a new one, new weeds, you put spray, you put powder, you put whatever, you just keep pumping non-stop. You buy those rows, you buy 20 of them, you put 5 of them comes out. 15 are not growing. Put water, you put whatever you want. Miracle growth, spray, doesn't come up. You say, what's going on? You know what's the secret of this? This is what the Tehillim says. David HaMelech writes, Ish ba'ar lo yeda, וכסיל לא יבין את זאת בפרוח רשעים כמו עשב ויציצו כל פרעדי אבן להישמדם עד עד. Who knows what's the meaning of this sentence? Raise his hand. What does it mean? איש בהר לא ידע וכסיל לא יבין את זאת. He said every Shabbos מזמור שיר ליום השבת. Who wrote it, by the way? Adam, first man in a creation of Hashem's, already praise Hashem, Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbat. That's the belief. We have that this is David HaMelech entered into his Tehillim. Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbat. And what's over there? Ish Ba'ar Lo Yeda, Uchsi Lo Yavin Et Zot. Ish Ba'ar means an ignorant person. Will not understand, will not know. Uchsi and a fool. Veksi lo yavin zot, will not understand what's going on. What is? Will not understand what? Bifroach reshaim kmo esev, that everywhere you look around in the world, you have wicked people moving around you non-stop, day after day, night after night, for generation after generation, like weeds. Esev, it's weeds. Comes up, pops up every second. Go on the street. How many people with yarmulke you see? I'm not talking here. Please go to places that is mostly Jewish. How many? 1 to 100 maybe, right? One yarmulke, 99 without. By the going, b'chlal, there's nothing even to talk about. 1 to 10,000 people you see him with yarmulke. So that's what it means. Bifroach reshaim kmo esev. Everywhere you look, you see those wicked people in the media, in the TV, in the sport, in the stadiums, in the concerts, in TV, in college, the professors, the cops, the judges. Everyone is wicked. Everyone is weak. What's going on here? Bifroach reshaim kmo esev, vayatzitzu kol po'alei aven. Those who do bad, evil things are keep popping up. What's the purpose of this? The last words of this sentence, this is what it all means. Leishamdam adead. Hashem raised them moments before, he destroyed them permanently. Leadead, forever and ever. This is a part of our Tanakh. This is halacha. It's not a story, it's a beautiful a song that Adam decided to make for Hashem. You know? This is halacha. This is a part of Tehillim. Tehillim is a part of the Tanakh. The Gemara is full of Tehillim. You know how many halachot you learn from Tehillim, from the words of Tehillim, from the sentences, what does it mean, this, that. They use it a lot, like the prophets, like everything, it's all prophecy. What do you learn from this? Do not be impressed by what's going on around you. These people are living in illusion, in a darkness. Most of them will not realize that they live in a darkness. The Ramchal writes, there are two kind of people that lives in the darkness. One is worse than the other. How can it be? You describe the same scenario. Reuven is in a choshech and Shimon is in a choshech. One is worse than the other, the Ramchal say. You know why? One that realized that he's in the darkness, and the other did not realize yet that he lives in the darkness, in illusion. Two people got on a train. They're both happy. Air conditioned. The train is moving. Beautiful views. Smoking their cigar, if it's permitted. They're both smiling. One is heading to the right destination, the right direction. And the other one is in the opposite direction. The feeling is exactly the same. We walk, these wicked people walk. Right? We have books, they have books. We eat, they eat. We have our wives, we have relation, they have relation. Right? We laugh, they laugh. We enjoy sport, they enjoy sport. Almost, not exactly, but almost everything the same from the outside. We get dressed, they get dressed. Some changes here and there, but it's not really critical. They run to the deepest hell, and we run to the world of eternity, if we will deserve it. Have to earn it, it's not easy. That's what they're going to say. Em ratzin v'anachnu ratzin. So the point, those two guys, the ones on the train, they feel exactly the same. When will the difference will come up? When?
At the end of the station.
The last station. When the journey is finished. When a person dies, that's when the truth is now coming up. That's what they say. The Torah says, nobody can see Hashem when he's alive. Lo irani ha'adam v'chai. Aval b'motam kulam ro'im. Every person that dies, whether he want it or not, whether he will be happy about it or not, that's besides the point, will be forced to see Hashem. Sheneemar lefanav ichreu kol yordei afar. Before Hashem, everyone will bow down on their knees. That's a sentence in the Torah, in the Tanakh. לפניו יכרעו כל יורדי עפר. בחייהם אינם רואים, אבל במותם כולם רואים. Everyone will see הקדוש ברוך הוא. So the point is, when the other guy realized that he did not only did not reach his destination, now he has to put so much effort to come back to his beginning point. How does it apply to our life? Some of us came here in a certain level and left in the same level. So what we lost, the potential profit that we could have gained, we just didn't gain it. We were lazy, we didn't learn, we didn't do. So we came 30%, we left 30%. That's your mark. Very bad, because the Gemara says, "Atzadikim and olam haba, each one nichva michupato shel chavero." Each one is getting burned from the bottom of the kilt of his friend, which means it's like stairs. You stand here and someone above you and someone above him. There's unlimited levels. Just one extra level that a person is above you, it burns you. It gives you agony and frustration. Why? One more little mitzvah. Another line in the Gemara, I would also be there. And there and here, it's already heaven and earth. The levels is huge differences between one level to another. So, a person came 30%, he left 30%. Where is going to be his aggravation and disappointment when Hashem will show him how, where he could have got? By the way, there are a few things that you should expect. I'm preparing you to know, Baruch Hashem, you're young, you have many more years to go, but before you realize, it will come. Life is flying. When a person will come after 120 years, remember these words. The number one disappointment is when Hashem shows a person with his potential, and his neshama, and his environment, and the tools that God gave him, what he could have reached, as opposed to what he really actually reached. And they're going to show you that you have a shoe store. You're making shoes, listening to the radio. You have a little yarmulke, like a quarter. You come to shul 9:30 in the morning when they finish already musaf. Show your face. You eat before kiddush. They show an ignorant am haaretz, an average am haaretz. and then they show you an image of yourself. Yeshiva, 1500 people, question from all over the world, you come to places, everyone get up, and I'll show you, that's what it is, that's what Sfarim says. And then Hashem says, see, this is what you should have been. It was easy, with such a little efforts. And now Hashem begins to analyze every step in your life that should have brought you there, and how many intersections of your life you had to make the right turn at this point, and you have to make the left turn here, and you always did the opposite. They offer you this yeshiva or this yeshiva, you chose the weak one, not the good one. Less hours. Right there, you went down 20%. Then you married this girl. Why? She was more pretty than the other. The other one was much righteous. She would push you to become Talmid Chacham. You went with the yofi, sheker achen ve'evel ha'yofi. You left with almost nothing. You went to business. You wanted cars like your brothers, your cousins. That's what you care. Business comes on the expense of Torah. It's impossible, both. Cannot eat from two worlds. You either this or you this. Very, very few people in history, Hashem gave them a blessing to be rich and Talmidei Chachamim. Most of the Talmidei Chachamim in history were very poor. Most, 95-99%. So yes, every rule has an exception to the rule. Here and there you can see. The Gemara says Rabbi Yoshua went on the street, was very ugly. Very ugly. But he was a huge, unbelievable Talmid Chacham. The daughter of the Caesar, the Roman Caesar, she came to him and said, Rabbi, she gave him a hint. Such beautiful knowledge in such ugly tool, appliance, whatever, I mean, utensil, whatever you want to call him. He realized what she means. She wants to say, you're such a smart man, but such an ugly face, such an ugly head. So he asked her, tell me, I want to ask you a question. Your father, where does he store his wine? She said, where does people store their wines? In ceramic barrels. That's where they put the wine. He told her, what? Your father, the king, put his wine in 99 cents barrels of wine? Isn't it proper that the king should have gold and silver barrels? Well, your father cannot afford it, or perhaps he's stingy. So I'm going to bring it to my father. Interesting question. She came to her father. She told him, Dad, we are the kings. How come our wines look in the same barrel like these poor people, almost beggars on the street? People laugh at us. I said, I never thought of it. Right away, put everything in gold and silver barrels. A week later, everything became vinegar. The best wines on earth became 99 cents vinegar bottles. He went out of his mind. You know, it takes years to make good wine. The older it gets, the better it is. So he told her, who told you this advice? Where did you come with this advice? She told him, that rabbi, the ugly one. He said, bring him over right away. So he told him, what did you do? You have something against me that you made me such a financial damage? He told him, I only answer her what she told me. Why did she tell you? He tells him the story. So the king was holding himself not to laugh. You know. So the king said, but after all, what would you really answer her? She asked you a valid question. He said, you see, if I wouldn't be the poor, ugly Rabbi Yoshua, I wouldn't become Rabbi Yoshua. So the king told him, what? You cannot be pretty and still be Talmid Chacham? What's the relation? What's the connection? He told him, yes. But because I'm ugly, I'm much better Talmid Chacham than if I would be pretty. Or if I would be rich. You understand? And that's what the Gemara says, Marbe Nechassim, Marbe De'akol. It's a rule. No matter how much you love the Torah, no matter how much you hoping that every second of your life you sit in yeshiva, like David HaMelech says, Shifti bebet Hashem kol yemei chayai. But David HaMelech couldn't sit in Bet HaMidrash all yemei chayav. He was a king. He was checking dam nida of the women. He went to wars. He was judging people. He was giving speeches. He couldn't sit in yeshiva. That's what David HaMelech wanted us to understand. He can be the king of the entire world. He wasn't just the king of Israel. Him and his son, kings of the entire world. Israel was on the top of the pyramid in this generation 3,000 years ago, especially son, King Solomon, King Shlomo. And what happened? He writes, Tov li Torat picha me'alfei zahav v'kesef. Give me the Torah better than all this wealth. Second, Shivti mi iten shivti bebet Hashem kol yemei chayei. I wish I had the opportunity to do what? To be a Talmid Yeshiva. Queens, Brooklyn, sitting in Bet Midrash all my life. Today, go to the yeshivot, go to the people with a camera and a microphone, and interview them. Tell them, listen, we are looking for candidates to become the king in a palace or in a White House, to see, to have servants, to have horses, to decide what's going to be. And are you interested? Do you know one that will say no? Is it possible you think that you're going to be able to find one that sits in one of the yeshivot somewhere? Maybe yes, I'm maybe exaggerating. But how many? How many say, yeah, sure, I'm not interested to be a king. I'm not interested to be a billionaire. I'm not interested to be famous. I want to be an anonymous Talmid Yeshiva right here in this little old Yeshiva, sit all my life and learn Torah. How many will say it? If you have someone who say it, you know that's the perfect person. He reached perfectness. So the second scenario is not a person that came with 30% and left with 30%. This is big disappointment. A person that came 30 or 40 or 50, and now he went out of this world in 10. He went back. That means he took the train to the wrong direction. So what's his correction now? From now, when he came to the world 70 years ago, he had to get from 40 to 100. That was the goal. That was the purpose of his creation. Now, if he will be reincarnated again, he have to start from 10 to 100. That's why his life will be much more miserable. That's why it will be much tougher. That's why it's going to have a lot of sicknesses and a lot of poverty and agony, and maybe he won't find the right color and problems with the children, because he's surim mechaprim ta'avonot. And that's, by the way, the main reason why you see some righteous people in today's life that they suffer so much, mainly because of their previous life. Because in the previous life they fell. They had to start when they came here in their file. There was already thousands of decrees for them. One decree for age 19, one decree for 22. It was all predetermined, predecided for them. That's what the Gemara says. What does the Gemara say? 40 yom lifnei vatzrut avlad, 40 days before the baby is created. What is which night the Gemara speaks about? The husband and wife had relation tonight. When it's gonna be a form? Shape, a form, human being, only 40 days later. Up to 40 days, it's in a process of creation, it's not ready yet. After 40 days, it's a human being. He has a pulse, he has feelings, he tastes. They made all kinds of experiments. So it's a complete human being. So the Gemara says, what the scientists found in the last few years, it's in the Gemara black on white. The Gemara says, 40 days before he became a human being, 40 days, which means the night that the seed and the egg went together, merged together, the angel takes a drop of the seed and comes to Hashem. That's what the Gemara says. Hashem, this human being that is being created now, which neshama you want to give him? Rich or poor? Hashem decides. Which means, before you even born, everything was decided for you. Some do nothing and make plenty of money. Dumb, foolish, whatever. They make all the big mistakes. But they make. Some is clever, smart, calculating. Make nothing. King Solomon said, Lo lachachamim lechem. Wisdom is not an indication of wealth. I'm sure there's some connection. The smart people have more chance to make good business deals. But in the end, it's Hashem's decision. So that's always above everything. All the skills you got, in 1 second Hashem can overcome. So, healthy or sick, in general, decided. Male and female, decided. Who are going to be your parents? It was decided already. Everything was decided except one thing. Tzadik or Rasha lo ne'emar. Righteous or wicked was not decided. To teach us the purpose of life is like the Rambam writes, it's the choice if to be righteous like Moshe Rabbeinu, like Moses, or wicked like Yerovam ben Navat. This is the words of the Rambam. And there's no power and no interference with your choice. It's 100% your choice. If you be righteous or wicked, that's your choice, and that's why you're going to either get punished if you did the wrong thing, or get rewarded if you did the right thing. So if a person came with a 40 and he went down to 20 or 30, it's going to be very painful for him. And that's the famous argument of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Three and a half years they sat and argue if it's better for the man to come again to this world or not. They didn't say again, but that's really what they meant. Because they, after three and a half years that they were arguing in Yeshivot, all the biggest Chachamim, all the scholars, all the sages, sitting together and arguing for more than 3 years, back and forth, if it was good for the man that he was created by Hashem in this material world. Can you believe this chutzpah in your ever, you ever such a chutzpah? Just think of it. If we're gonna sit now and argue if Hashem did the right thing by putting us here or not. Where do you get this this understanding, Bechlal, to even have an argument here? Can I come and say, oh, Hashem doesn't know what he's doing, he made a mistake that he put me here? Believe me, it would be better off he wouldn't put what? How can I even start? But that was, supposedly that was the argument. Some say it was good that Hashem put you here. Some say it would be better off not. And the Gemara says, Gamru v'manu, in the end, it would be better not to be created. Gee, chutzpah get million times worse now. Verdict, they reach a verdict. It would be better not to be created. Which means, God forbid, chas v'shalom lichora, that Hashem supposedly did not know what he do. They think they contradict Hashem's decision. And of course, that's not what it means. Let's not be fools, yeah? What it really meant, these secrets, you know, all the stories of the Gemara, it's full of secrets. One of the secrets in this Gemara is, they were arguing about the reincarnations, Gilgulim. When they say it's better for a person to come back to the world, not in the first creation. First creation, it was a test that starts from zero. Whatever you achieve, you achieve. You cannot go below zero. That's it. You can only go up. The question is, how much you gonna go up? Second time you come, it's not the same case. Because now you came, you could have reached already 50 in your previous life. Now you may lose it. You become worse than what you were in your previous life. You're weak. You didn't do what the Torah says. You didn't understand the purpose of life so much. You went after your desires. You're a phony person. You didn't search for the truth. You're lazy. You're a crook. Millions of problems out there. To get safe from all of them, we really need a lot of siyata dishmaya, a lot of help from Hashem. What's the solution? They say, now when he got a second chance, third, fourth, fifth chance, each reincarnation which the soul is being put in a new body, in a different CD to different parents, it's another test all over from the beginning. And sometime in school or in college, when a student in the first test got 64 from 100, is not satisfied. Some schools, I don't know in America, but in Israel at least, this is the way it was. Everyone can come and ask for a second test. But the second test, you have the chance to improve your mark, but at the same time, you may not do so well in a second test, which is unlikely, but you can get a worse mark, which means it's the same like in court. Sometimes if they sentence you to 8 years in prison and you appeal in Israel, they reopen the case, the judge, you appeal because you want 4 years in prison instead of 8. But you'll be surprised, some of the cases the judge say, I'm surprised you even appealed. I'm adding 5 more years to your verdict. Go both ways. And it happened not once, not twice, many times, that somebody came to ask that this punishment will be easier, and they added more to his punishment. Because the new court decided, they said, what? They only gave him 8 years after what we see here. We're adding another few more years to his verdict. And this is that. We came in certain mark that we already had in our hand. It's not the greatest. Who's to say we're going to reach more? Maybe we'll lose. That's what they said. So what's the conclusion? And we'll finish with this. The conclusion is this. V'achshav shenivra. And now that he was created in a new body again. Yefashfesh b'ma'asav. V'yesh omrim yemashmesh b'ma'asav. He should check his acts, put them together. And some says, what is really what they really said, Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel, Yemashmesh b'ma'asav. When you ask the average Israeli, tell me the difference in the Hebrew language between Yefashfesh b'ma'asav or Yemashmesh b'ma'asav, I can already prepare you that probably nobody will know the answer. Perhaps. But if you really dig into it, what it really means is there was two opinions what they finally said. Yefashfesh b'ma'asav means a person will search over everything he does to make sure he does the right thing. To be careful not to make sins. That's what it means. Yemashmesh b'ma'asav means what you already have, it's not enough. Go retroactive. Check one by one if it was really the right thing to do. And if not, go back and correct. Not only from now on, yefashfesh b'ma'asav. Yemashmesh, it's called mamash, it means mamash. Something real, actual thing. You already have it in your file. You already have it in your bank. The spiritual bank. Go and check that as well. Maybe you can do better. You gave this guy tzedakah, go check. Maybe you should have given him 10 times more. Maybe the little that you gave him hardly helps, but if you give just a little more, you save his life. Sometimes if you do half, it's like zero. If a person needs $100,000 for surgery, and he has 5 hours to die, and you come in the last 10 minutes, they didn't reach the money, and they need $100,000, and you give 90,000 donation. But if you had given 100,000, you saved his life. Now you gave 90, even 99. The doctor said, I'm sorry, you don't have the money, I'm not doing the surgery. And then he died. So then you say, what do you want from me? What are you complaining? I gave $90,000 charity to this guy. But it's worthless. You understand? Or sometimes the other way around. Somebody gave 99 already. They couldn't find the 1,000. You came and gave the 1,000, perhaps is more important than the 99. That's what the Gemara says. If a person dig a hole in the ground, which is 9 tfachim, according to the halacha, you need, if you consider you as a criminal and liable for any damage for animals that walk in the street and fell into that pit, you have to do 10 tfachim and up, which is about 3 feet and up. Less than that, there's no life risk for the horses and the cows that walk in the street. Remember, the old days, this is their transportation was the animals. And some people sometimes made holes to hide their stuff and cover it at night when they go to sleep. And the animals don't see it. The animals fall in. So if someone made 9 and the animal fell in, is not liable for the life of the animal. Because 9, according to the halakha, it's still not life risk. And if the animal died, the Gemara said we have to assume that the animal suffered from some kind of illness or sickness. There's another reason why it dies. What happened if a person dig 9, knowing that's what the border, more than that it's already dangerous and maybe all liable. And one person came and only dig the ladder tefach, which is about 6-7 inches. He made it a little bit deeper. And now the animal fell and broke the leg or died. Who's liable? The one says, what did I do? I only did 1 tefach. I did 10%. Go to him, he did 90%. The other one say, what are you coming to me? I went up to the limit. I wouldn't go 1 more inch, because I know it's dangerous. He did it. Who is really responsible? Three possibilities. The first, the second of both of them. And there's a fourth scenario. If you want to say both of them, there's two possibilities. Both of them equally, 50-50, or one 90% of the punishment, and one of the payment and one 10% of the payment. Four possibilities. The first one has to pay everything, the second one has to pay everything, they split 50-50, or the first one pay 90% and the other one pay 10%. What's the right answer?
The second guy
has to pay everything?
Yeah.
What do you say? Baruch Hashem, you could have write the Gemara. Kulam chachamim, kulam nevonim. That's the answer. Why? What do you want from the first one? He did what he did and left. He had no intention to do any crime. He went to what is allowed. But what do you learn from this story? That it doesn't go by quantity. It could be timing. It could be the results of what happened. You understand? It's common sense. Up to here, it wasn't dangerous. The little that you had made it dangerous. You understand? And I can give you millions of examples like this, but that's not the time. Thank you very much. And we will meet again, Bezrat Hashem, on the Wednesday in 2 weeks from now. Thank you.